Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism, coming to you from Sydney, on Gadigal lands, on the Eora Nation, right across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey, and I am the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at the University of Technology Sydney, and my producer today is Anthony Dockrell. Today's edition is a bit special on a couple of fronts. Firstly, we are recording it before a live audience in the business building of UTS rather than in the studios of 2SER, our normal home. And secondly, and most importantly, we're doing that because we have a very special guest who, once we've had this chat, is going to submit himself to a public Q&A. So we're not recording that, I should add. That person is Richard Greengrass, the Vice President of News at Google, whose job, among many other things, entails guiding the company's strategy on how news is surfaced in search, in Google News itself, and on other devices, and overseeing the company's efforts to sustain a healthy ecosystem for journalism. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
It's great to have you. So on one level, you have a dream job. You fly around the world working out how Google can help the news media industry. You sit on top of a US $300 million fund called the Google News Initiative. You are like Santa Claus for journalists. But then again, you also fly around the world for meetings with news executives who sometimes think, and sometimes articulate it, I'm sure, to your face, that Google is stealing all their advertising money, or words like it, and with regulators who increasingly want to clip the wings of Google. So that's a kind of bad Santa vibe. So how do you, help me out with some facts here, how do you balance those views out? Where do you kind of, you're good Santa and bad Santa at the same time?
Well, the way I look at it is simply this. I think, as we know, the internet has changed our world in so many ways. It has changed all of our behaviors in terms of how we find and access information, how we understand things, how we understand the world around us and each other, right? In dramatic ways, it has changed business models, obviously, significantly, which I'm sure we'll talk further about. So, you know, yes, I have an extraordinarily fortunate position to be able to do what I'm doing today. Does it come with challenges? Absolutely. But frankly, you know, we are in this privileged position, and we should simply step up, and we are stepping up and addressing the challenges as best we can.
So when news executives say to you, but Google, we had a business before, and it's all your fault, we lost it, what do you say?
What I say, let's look at the facts, right? The internet happened. The simplest way to look at this, as far as I'm concerned, is in 1985, the Metropolitan Daily newspaper, whether that be in Dallas, Texas, or here in Sydney, was the internet of their communities. Mm-hmm. It wasn't interactive, but it provided all the information that people in those cities needed to live their lives. Yes, the local city council coverage, but also where were the movies playing? And let me read the few reviews and see the big ads from the studios. It was where my dad, when I turned 16, found a used car for me in the classifieds of the Providence Journal where mm-hmm. he worked.
Yeah. Back then.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's where my mom found recipes for Sunday dinner in the discount coupons at the supermarket. When I came out of college and moved to Washington, D.C., I found my first job in the classifieds of the Washington Post, my first apartment, so on and so forth, mm-hmm. right? But our behaviors have changed. None of us would do that today, right? And so, yes, the business model has changed, right? That was a vastly profitable business in its era. And it was a comparatively short era. You know, the modern age of newspapering basically started after the introduction of television, which had a huge impact on the newspaper space. Mm-hmm. And it began to end in the 1990s, first with cable television and satellite television, which changed the economies of advertising, then, of course, the internet. So let's understand these core dynamics that occurred. Yes, Google plays a significant role in this environment, but the revenue that newspapers gained when they were the internet of their communities did not move to Google. Right? Classified advertising moved to online marketplaces. It's not even called advertising anymore.
So it's not Google's fault, is it?
No, it is not Google's fault. It would be incorrect in any kind of factual analysis to suggest that is the case.
Okay, well, we turn to a similar theme, but not sure. Keep to return to the same question. We've got plenty to talk about the future of journalism, if you like, but I do want to take you back a bit. So just over 7 years ago, when you were Director of News and Social Products at Google, same job, different title, more or less, right? You noted that the media was, and I quote, living in extraordinary times. It was, and I quote, in the process of being completely transformed, tossed upside down. And you added a question, what will be the next startling innovation? Now, around about the same time, any number of news executives, and I was one of them, were saying the most extraordinary thing about these times was watching the revenue shift. And most of us were thinking about survival and cost cutting rather than innovation. So I guess my question again, to return this theme, you are primarily optimistic about the future of journalism. That's your job, I guess. But those times, these people were primarily pessimistic. 7 years on, with the benefit of a bit of hindsight, who got it right?
In terms of optimism?
Yeah, who got the optimism index right, as it were?
Oh, I'm still optimistic about the future of news, and there's a lot of good reason to be optimistic. Again, we're going to see transitions in the environment of news. We're seeing legacy traditional publishers clearly go through the pain of disruption. Many of them will survive, some will not. But at the same time, we're also seeing very vibrant new sources of news and journalism at every level. Mm-hmm. And let me just cite a few examples, because this isn't just a theory, right? You look at someone like the New York Times, they were struggling, but they decided 8 years ago to go full bore on developing their subscription business. They now have 4 million digital subscribers, which is twice as many as they ever had in the days of print. Look at The Guardian, the Manchester Guardian, that had about 150,000 circulation before the internet. Now they're a global brand and have 1 million people who are regularly contributing to them.
So is it only about scale?
No, it's not only about scale, because the third example, and there are others, but I think these are really important ones. In Canada, there's a fascinating company by the name of Village Media. It's a for-profit company. Developed by Jeff Elgee, founded about 8 or 10 years ago. He has digital pure plays in communities across Canada, 12 that he owns and operates, and he's, I think, in the process of launching another dozen or two dozen more. He is profitable, but he's come into the arena with a very clean slate approach and a very strong focus on the community.
So how does that work?
He, first of all, recognizes that what brings a community together is information about the community. What's going on at the high school? What events are happening? Yes, you do accountability journalism on top of that. But he's been very savvy about it. In some of his markets, he has 60% of the population getting his daily email newsletter. And he's profitable. And by the way, here's how his revenue mix is today. 85% of his revenue is custom local advertising, including classifieds. Because interestingly, in small communities, that degree of trust is important. If I'm going to sell a used car, I'd rather not confront someone from 50 miles away who I may not know. And all kinds of custom local advertising. The other 15% is programmatic via services like Google and others. He hasn't yet gone to subscriptions
Does Google help him? Has helped him in some way?
We have not directly helped him. He uses a lot of our technology, which I did not even realize at the time. I met him when I was testifying before the Heritage Commission in Canada. And now we're working with him very closely because he has a platform that works. For instance, with McClatchy Newspapers in the United States, we have funded an experiment to basically take Jeff's platform and apply it in a community in Ohio, in the United States, Youngstown, Ohio, to see does this platform approach and his playbook work in other communities? And if so, then we want to take those learnings, whether through him or through companies like Automatic, where we're funding a CMS for local newsrooms, can we allow these models to more easily be scaled by others?
So what we're really talking about here is a combination of the civic function of journalism and the business model.
Yes.
Right? So the two can, in your view, coexist.
They can. In fact, they in even the modern heyday of newspapers, right? What made the newspaper work wasn't the accountability journalism. It was the community information that made it work. And obviously the accountability journalism, which was very important on top of that.
Do you think journalism though needs to change in its fundamental nature? You know, the kind of idea that journalism will tell you that, a local journalism will tell you there's a cat up a tree or a car accident down your road. That sort of news is so ubiquitous, it seems hardly a value proposition for journalism anymore, right? What is the proposition for journalism in, say, village media or even the MIT, in a sense?
Well, my preferred definition of journalism is to give citizens the information they need to be informed good citizens. Mm-hmm. I actually see our role as at Google with Google Search is how do we give our users the tools and information from third-party sources to be informed good citizens. I think that principle, I would like to think, is as true today as it was then. Now, given all that, what I've said many times over the past decade or so is I think it's important for journalists to rethink every dimension of the model. Not that it must change, but intellectually important to do so. Yes, the business model has changed. But what about the media form? We have people consuming information throughout the day on these devices. Mm-hmm. How do we get knowledge into their heads? How does the story form evolve? I don't have the answers, but I do believe it's important for us to consider. How does that work?
You talked a little bit about constructive journalism, which we maybe can explain a little bit about that for the audience. But the constructive idea being not reporting the car accident down the road, rather than reporting why it happened or how it might not happen again.
Yes, I mean, the way I say it, and I love the phrase constructive journalism. Others use the phrase solutions journalism. Mm. Not that I disagree with their intent, but this isn't about happy news, right? Yes, it's important to report the car accident. To me, constructive journalism says you report the event as it happened, but you also want to go beyond that. You want to try to understand why it happened. You might want to surface what are the options available to the community to make sure it doesn't happen again, mm-hmm. right? And I think you want to establish that perspective and that philosophy about news with your community. You know, one of the deeply unfortunate things that's happening, and this didn't start recently, but it's getting worse, is people don't even want to listen to the news because they say it's all horrible.
It's all bad.
And I would rather just hide away from it. Ooh. This is awful. This is deeply challenging to our societies, right? Right. That can't be how we move forward.
And so it is how we're moving forward, though.
It is, unfortunately, how we move forward.
Again, the news from that thing called Facebook.
But say that again?
Yeah. Sorry. Is there a glitch?
Well,
they're getting a lot of people getting their news from their Facebook feed, which is feeding them what they want to hear, right?
Yes, they're getting it from all kinds of sources, and indeed social networks as well. And that's something that I think we have to take into account also, mm-hmm. right? That does present new challenges. But there too, you know, that's why, again, it's important to rethink not just the form. How can reporters have a better ability to use data to do the work that they do? How do you engage with audiences? Like, if you're increasingly reliant on reader revenue, everyone I know who's successful at that at the local level is changing their methods of engagement with the audience. Mm-hmm. It's no longer about sitting up here as journalists and telling the community what to believe. It's how do we engage with them? Are we doing town halls? Are we saying, tell us, what are the needs and interests of your community? What are the issues that you would like us to address? Right? How do you establish that relationship? To me, that's the importance of constructive journalism and saying, yes, what they're doing is important. It helps me understand, yes, bad things happen in the world, but here's how we can find solutions since they may happen less frequently going forward.
Okay. I'd like to acknowledge that Google does a lot for the news industry. I should also acknowledge that Google has actually funded a project for the CMT, so just to show that we acknowledge that. And I'd like to come back to a couple of specific things you're doing, namely the Backlight project and common knowledge. But I would like to touch on, given that you are sitting in Sydney and in Australia, something that Google seems a bit reluctant to do for the news industry, and that is this revenue-sharing idea as proposed by the Australian Competition Consumer Commission's report into digital platforms. I mean, I'm sure you're across it. Mm-hmm. So one of their recommendations, which are now before the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, is essentially to have, I quote, a regular sanction negotiation of revenue sharing between platforms and news publishers. You guys don't like that. Why is that?
Well, first of all, it's very important in these discussions to understand specifically what one might be proposing, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I think that's not a lot of detail in that, but I think it's just broadly that there should be money coming back from Google to the publishers.
Well, let's yeah. take it apart in its different pieces. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned today, we do offer, for instance, advertising technologies used by hundreds of thousands of publishers around the world, where the revenue shares, by the way, are 70 to 90% to the publisher. That last year generated $14.5 billion to publishers around the globe, money in their pockets, okay. right? We're doing Subscribe with Google, which we developed in collaboration with the community of publishers around the world to help drive reader revenue, where we, where we've come up with some easy to use tools, where we say, you know, we have email addresses and credit card information for a lot of our users, and that can help simplify a purchase process, mm-hmm. right? If I have to enter a credit card number, people will abandon it. Just, I mean, all the, anyone in e-commerce tells you these things. Under that program, by the way, 95% of the revenue goes to the publisher, and we also do not seek to own the customer. So if the subscription happens through us, we give the username and the email address to the user, quite different from the way Apple News, for instance, works with their subscription program.
But all those things involve using Google tools. Or Google
services. At the option, by the way, of the publisher. And in fact, we've broken it up into component parts, and they can use each individual component at their will. For instance, at the back end of it, we've now, in Google search, for instance, if you do a query on, say, Brexit, we won't change the organic search results. But if we know that you're a subscriber to a publication, then we will put, typically in like position four, here are results about that query from the publications that you subscribe to. Because we think it's important, if you're a subscriber, that you get the full value of that subscription. Okay. We will do that. If we know that you have a subscription, we don't care how you got that subscription. Right. If you tell us you have that subscription, or if the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Sydney Morning Herald says, by the way, if we can link these accounts with your permission, Google will help make sure that you're seeing information from us.
But you still don't like the ACCC's proposal.
Well, I want to make sure that, again, here's what I think some people are trying to propose, and this is what has transpired in Europe mm-hmm. over the last several months.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
Well, but that is the core tax. Is the answer to the question, is the notion of a snippet tax.
Well, I don't necessarily say they are prescribed a snippet tax, and we'll get to that because people may not know what we're talking about. They're really just saying, hey, Google, Facebook, publishers, sit in a room and come up with a way that more money can go to the news industry.
So two things.
That's really what they're saying at that fundamental level.
And that is exactly what we're doing through the programs I mentioned. That is exactly what we're doing with the $300 million where we're looking to drive innovation. But let's be clear about a couple of things, whether we talk about snippets or not, right? There's a presumption underneath all of this that somehow we're making a lot of money off of news content, right? Now, we currently send 24 billion visits each month to news organizations around the world through Google Search in Google News, right? Which is valuable traffic in and of itself. Traffic which publishers used to pay newsstands to accommodate distribution of their content. So let's recognize that. But in spite of the fact that it's 24 billion, current events queries on Google is in the low single digits. And by the way, if you look at the results against those queries, you don't see ads because those typically aren't terribly commercially viable. One out of 1,000 queries is a commercially viable query. So if anything is based on the notion that somehow we're making a lot of money off of news publishers' content on Google, it's simply incorrect.
But aren't you making money out of the data of the people who access that content?
No, because interestingly, that data specifically in that category, first of all, it isn't terribly helpful. The data that's helpful is, are you looking for a refrigerator? Right?
I mean, it's the
commercial queries. And in fact, any queries in the current event space, particularly if they're anything close to politics, right, we specifically by intent, we don't track ideology either in terms of the content that we're assessing and ranking or of the ideological leanings of our users. So no, there's no particular data there that's valuable to Google. So I was saying this is it's based on incorrect assumptions. But bottom line, the important thing I think is also this. Journalism is best when it is independently sustainable. Right? You do not want journalism to be based on artificial peers of support. particularly based on a notion of, like, you know, it's easy today to look at Google and say, wonderfully successful company. Will that be the case 5-10 years from now? Right. Part of my career, by the way,
You think Google's going to be broken up in 10 years' time?
I'm not saying that.
Okay, I'm just trying to put,
I have no idea.
I'm a journalist,
but anyway. I'll tell you this. Okay, in 1996, 97, I was head of the number two search engine in the United States and probably far beyond, called Excite. Yahoo was number one. And we were trying, how could we conceivably knock Yahoo off their perch? And Excite was an excellent search engine. But guess what happened? Larry and Sergey came out of a garage in Palo Alto and created Google. Mm. And knocked both of us off our perches.
Good job they gave you a job.
And good job. Luckily for me, they ultimately gave me a job. Yeah. But you look beyond that, and you look how device behaviors have changed. Shifts to mobile, shifts to audio speakers. Mm-hmm. What does that do to the underlying models that drive our success today? We don't know. So my main point is, be wary. We all in the world of journalism should be wary about relying on third-party sources of support that may not be there the next day.
Okay, so just to finish on the ACCC, though, you're not really going to go to where they want you to go. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, again, they posed the question. They didn't pose a specific solution, right?
Well, they said that Google had market power and privileged positions, and therefore it should pay over more money. That was their essence of their argument.
Well, I mean, and again, but it gets back to these very core facts. I mean, one can say, oh, the world of news has changed and maybe big companies should help. Well, you could look at that across the board and say, oh, interesting. And some people have proposed this. Maybe all digital advertising should be taxed. I don't know, whatever one might want to do. But be careful about the determination of artificial means of support, and be careful about models on the presumption. You know, like, here's an interesting thing. When people even talk about taxes, they say, be careful about presuming that a disproportionate amount of that revenue, wherever it comes from, is going to go to support quality journalism. Mm-hmm. Because I've never seen a model that would allow that to work, because of the simple reason that it's impossible to define. I travel the world dealing with public policy issues. I've not seen a law that defines what news is, much less quality journalism, or suggest how that should be supported. So when I look at the world of media today and the world of journalism today, what is quality journalism? How do we make sure that if that's going to happen, you're not supporting, for instance, poor quality journalism?
Well, Google has just recently made some changes to the guidelines that privilege original reporting.
Correct.
So you've had a crack at this question.
Exactly, in the simple context of original reporting.
So what is that? What's the definition of original reporting?
I think original reporting, as people in the business would define it, is where you have reporters who are doing the hard-nosed work of gathering basic facts and introducing those facts to the media landscape. Right. And I think the concerns, and understandable concerns, that news organizations who do a lot of original reporting are appropriately concerned about is, I do the original reporting, but somebody else is taking and rewriting my story and benefiting from that.
And they're getting privileged in
search. Precisely. Precisely. Yep. And they're not getting privileged, but they occur. And so we have, over the years, we've done a lot to try to do a better job of understanding where does the canonical article in this story.
What is the original?
Which is complex. And I could spend an hour just defining how we approach that. And I would actually, instead of spending that hour, But I did a very deep, detailed interview with the Global Editors Network that they republished on Medium. And I would encourage you to take a look at it. Yes, we are making further advancements. One is, machine learning has been very helpful to us in understanding stories and how they evolve. And we've also introduced policies that guide those who evaluate our search results to help us do a better job, to help them as they go through and assess results and say, you know, they read each article and say, go behind the article. Where is this coming from? What do you know about the domain? What do you know about the expertise of the author? Is this an original piece? What are the attributes that might say this is an original piece? Does it feature, for instance, a lot of quotes from people who aren't necessarily known? These are hard things to understand, but our objective there is to say, one thing I would be particularly satisfied with is, in addition to identifying the original report and doing it as much justice as possible, are we doing a good job of understanding who are the sources in the ecosystem that are doing original reporting to some degree versus those who are doing none? And so can we raise the tide on all those boats who are doing that work?
This wouldn't stop, though, a rewrite outfit from taking a canonical piece, rewriting it, or sticking a few extra quotes, and then getting surfaced quite high in Google search. Is that right?
Well, it won't stop anyone from doing the rewrites. Obviously, our objective is to make sure that those rewrites aren't surfacing highly.
Right.
And I'm not going to suggest by any means that the approaches that we've undertaken will be perfect. These are moving targets. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, there are continually going to be outlets that do that. Now, as you know, as we often say, that is obviously, that's part of free expression as well. Right. That might be hard, obviously, if you're and I've been there at Salon, right? We did a lot of investigative journalism, and the Associated Press would go do the same story 2 days later and wouldn't give us any credit for it. Right.
It's cruel out there, isn't it? Cruel.
It's a cruel world. It's a tough world.
We should talk about the European Union and the snippets tax.
Yes.
Because we sort of floated it up there.
Well, it's not a snippets tax, yes.
Okay. They've given, the French in particular, have given news sites the right to charge Google for the privilege of providing news snippets. Is that the right
no,
way?
No, that actually is not what the law states.
There you go. You better explain, because I'm clearly not right.
The European Union passed a copyright directive earlier this year, which... it's a directive to the member states. The French government was the first to transform it into law. Mm-hmm. What the copyright directive states is that, appropriately, it enhances copyright for the digital age, and it says the copyright holder can determine what third parties can use. That's what it states. It doesn't require payment. It says the publisher determines what they're willing to make available.
Right. Right? Giving them the right.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And so we have complied with that law, and I was in France just 3 weeks ago communicating what our compliance would be. Now, let's understand a few things here. Some of this might be obvious, some of this might not. When you look at search results, yes, what you typically see is a URL, a headline or title for that URL, and often a preview underneath it, what some people call a snippet, right? Interestingly, on Google for the last several years, for news results on the top of search and in Google News, we typically don't use snippets. And the reason is that news headlines tend to be very descriptive and written carefully to communicate information and compel interest. The snippets aren't terribly useful. And by taking them away, we could actually have more results in less space, which actually drives more traffic.
Yep.
And interestingly, publishers have also told us over the years in news that they felt that snippets give away too much information, and they would actually prefer we not use them. So there's an interesting paradox now where French publishers are saying, we insist you pay for snippets that we would prefer you not use. All right? And so beyond that, what we've said, yes, is we have unveiled new tools available to all publishers in the world to tell us what we can and cannot use. Do you want to allow us to use a preview? And if so, at what length? Can we use a thumbnail? And if so, what size? Can we use, in surfacing a video result, can we show the first 6 seconds or 9 seconds or 0 seconds? It is up to you to tell us to do that.
So we're not in a situation as you were with Spain, the Spanish a few years ago, where Google's going to pull out because it sounds like there's a slightly more subtle policy.
The difference in the world of Spain, but I want to get to, let me finish the EU and then we can glad to go to Spain. All these countries, glad to visit them.
I'm sure they're glad to have.
And so what we've said is we will honor those selections, but no, we will not pay for the snippets.
Right.
And there are many reasons why. One is users who use Google trust Google The consumer research tells us things very clearly, very high percentages of trust. Interestingly, when we look at people who don't trust us, the primary issue is they think we're being paid to surface the results that we surface, right? And so by policy, we will not accept payment for search results. We have ads, they're labeled as ads, mm-hmm. nor will we pay for results to appear in Google. That's a red line. We will not cross that line. Now, to the value equation, are we giving appropriate value back to publishers? Well, let's take a look at that. Historically, and to this day, as you know, print publishers paid newsstands to actually make their products available and build audiences. Interestingly, France, the only country on earth that actually regulates newsstands, they did this after World War II, and the purpose of the law was to say newsstands should carry a wide breadth of diversity of sources. Guess what? That's what we do, mm-hmm. right? But we don't charge publishers to be in search, as you know. And we do provide immense amount of traffic back. As I said, 24 billion visits per month. And in Europe, Deloitte assessed that news publishers, large news publishers in Europe, each of those clicks is worth between 4 and 6 euro cents. Now use whatever math you'd like, use a penny, use five. It's an immense amount of money. So the notion that the value exchange is not there is okay. fallacious.
So just because we're running out of time, so where do you think this is going to end, this particular situation in France?
Well, what we've said is, look, we will not pay for snippets. We think there's a very sound principle for why we should not, and we will adhere to that. But don't mishear us. We have been and will continue to contribute resources, technologies, and dollars towards the future of news. In fact, I would suggest that no private company on the face of the earth has contributed more towards the future of news. Okay. Not as investments, not equity holdings, but as contributions to the industry. We will continue to do that, and we will continue to do more. So let's just be clear that what we want in the end here, I think what all of us want, is a principled, fair, and equitable ecosystem. Not one that's driven by what decisions Google or any entity might make as to who the preferred sources are. So let's create a fair and equitable ecosystem. Let's do everything we can to make sure that we enable, whether it be Google or anyone else, a future for news that is sustainable and independent, which is what it needs to be.
Okay. A couple of quick things. Facebook News, what do you think of that? It's an interesting, because what I found interesting about myself, and I know they're not your company, so you could be a dispassionate observer maybe, but is the idea that they seem to have done a deal with the New York Times and News Corporation, and that seems to be a change of focus from News Corporation in terms of Facebook, and you know, News keeps asking, suggesting that Google should be broken up. What's happened? Are they back in love with them and they don't love you guys? I mean, what's going on there?
Look. Outside of my facial expressions.
Yes, well, we should be on TV.
It's not for me to comment on Facebook strategies or what they do. What I will point out, what I think is so important in all of these conversations, and it's something I make sure to raise in every engagement I have with publishers or with tech journalists or this group here. Today, the term platforms is tossed around as if it were a generic. And I say, when you consider the ecosystem in the role of these companies that you label as platforms, make sure you understand precisely what you're talking about in each case. And I don't say this to criticize any particular company, just understand what drives them. What's their business model? Social networks, Facebook, it is a private platform. It is all about engagement in their environment. Right, in everything they've done, whether it was instant articles or this, is about activity within their environment. I look at Apple. I worked at Apple. iOS is a great operating system. They manage it tightly. That's their business, the clean, well-lighted place of the iOS ecosystem. Google, specifically Google Search, Google News, Google Advertising Services, right? YouTube, you could put more in the social network category because we host the content. We can set policies for the hosting of that content. But when you look at Google Search and our ad technologies, the truth is our platform is the open web, right? Like people have asked me, and maybe this is an appropriate close for this portion, They say, Richard, all this stuff that you're doing, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because publishers criticize you and you want more friends? I say, well, I like having friends. That's not a bad thing. That's not what drives us, though. They say, is this because you have high-level principles about the importance of journalism in society? I hope so, and yes, we do. But that's not really what drives us. If you want, again, look at the underlying motivations of a business and understand why. Google search, by far our most popular product and valued product by consumers around the world, its value and relevance is based on there being an open and rich ecosystem of expression on the web. You look at our ad technologies, again, used by hundreds of thousands of publishers generating a lot of revenue. None of that would happen if those publishers weren't successful on the open web. So all of these efforts that we're driving, whether it's to do a better job in search results to make sure they're trusted and relevant, or whether what we're doing to enable a healthy ecosystem for news and expression in general, is very much tied to the core nature of our business. Mm-hmm. The reason why I went to Google, right, I mean, yes, I've had an interesting career and an extraordinarily privileged career. But I went to work for Google initially 12 years ago because I felt in this ecosystem, and it was very clear to me back then, because again, I have been on this cutting edge of media and technology for actually close to 50 years. It's kind of scary. What I realized, though, is that there was any entity in this ecosystem that could have good and positive impact on the evolution of media and journalism is Google.
Okay.
Right? And again, I'm not saying we're perfect, but I think that's what we're trying to do. I think we're doing it in a principled fashion. And as I tell every journalist, your job is to hold institutions to account, including Google.
Oh, and that's what we have to do.
And do that.
Very soon.
And the only thing I ask is go deep, understand the true nature of what's going on. Don't base your reporting on memes, because memes are dangerous. But go deep, understand the nature of the environment, of the economics, of the particular challenges of free expression in our world today. I deal a lot with challenges of misinformation. Misinformation is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. We know that. To me, the biggest and most dangerous impact of misinformation is that it has stimulated regulation around the world, some of it well-intended, most of it well-intended, some of it less so, but in many cases with very troubling secondary consequences on free expression itself.
Okay, we're gonna leave it there because I wanna leave room for questions, and we're gonna keep asking questions because we've taken up a little bit too much time. Richard, thank you so much for your time and thank you for being on Fourth Estate.
Oh, thank you, Peter, real pleasure.
And thank you for listening to The Fourth Estate. This edition was recorded at the School of Business at UTS, and thanks to everyone involved in making it happen. Fourth Estate can be heard across the country on the Community Radio Network and made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. And make sure you subscribe to your favorite podcast app so you can listen to Fourth Estate at your leisure. And we'll be back next week. But in the meantime, you can our handle on Twitter is Fourth Estate AU. And many thanks to my producer, and my name is Peter Frey, and thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.